RPG Lessons Learned. When the game is over, when your players are gone, that's when lessons are learned. We are at RPGLL Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, rpglpodcast@gmail.com, and check us out online at rpglessonslearned.com. Welcome to RPG Lessons Learned, the show where you can learn from our mistakes. With me as usual is Brian.
Hello, Dustinian.
And Mike.
Hey, Dusty.
So, today, we'll be talking about another game, the fourth session in our East Texas University campaign. Red Necromancer is the one sheet that I ran for this session. And actually, guys, we just ran that yesterday.
I know, it's like fresh.
It's completely fresh. Brian has no excuse not to remember stuff.
I the only thing I don't remember was the thing I was not there for.
Okay, fair enough. Episode 53, guys.
Woo, new fiscal year.
Let's just take a moment. Yeah, new fiscal year. This is the actual anniversary of our show.
Yep.
Yeah. So last time was fiscal year, and this is the actual anniversary of RPGLL. And as we said last episode, we are starting this year as we mean to go on, which is with an excellent recap and some lessons learned. Shall we jump right in?
Sure. Yeah. Do we have any like new strategy or anything that we need to work on, or do we have like an executive offsite that we have to?
I think we did that a few, not that long ago. We did the forward-looking metasode.
Oh yeah, that works. Yep.
And we need to re-listen to the metasode because there's some things that ideas that we wanted to do that we haven't done because work has been insane all of us.
Do we need to switch around people on the board?
No, I think the board's good.
Okay.
And I think we're aligned to our strategy heading into the new fiscal year. It's just a matter of execution.
Okay. It's always a matter of execution.
It's always a matter of execution.
I do like the idea of a company offsite, though. I think that'd be good for morale.
Yeah, I think so as well.
All right. Sounds good. How about a seafood restaurant?
Okay.
Okay.
Perfect. So, let's talk about Red Necromancer. Ordinarily, at this point in the show, I ask for numeric rankings, but we actually did that immediately following play. So I already know that Mike rated this session a 9 and Brian rated it an 8. So real quick, guys, Mike, why the 9?
It was a really solid, fun, fast-paced game. I think I remember at the before we even really started the game, I kind of talked about, you know, that something we should keep in mind is something we've been talking about as a theory on our show of, or not a theory, but a theme on our show of how actions should have consequences. And at first, I was really, really worried the direction we were going in the game. I don't want to get into it yet because I know this is something we'll talk about in depth. But the direction we were going into in the game was going to have severe consequences. But then we got lucky and everything turned out all right. So I think that combination of fast, fun, luck, that made a really fantastic game.
Brian, how about your 8? What's the elevator pitch behind your rating of an 8?
Well, first, let me explain my rating. I don't think I ever have. I can't conceivably ever see myself giving anything a 10. So an 8, it's effectively a 9. It was a lot of fun for the reasons Mike articulated. And I tried to play it again in character, and I tried to be as in character as possible. And I love the RPing part of the game, and it's a good chance to flex a mental muscle, pretending to be somebody different, where typically a lot of times if I fail to RP, I'm just going through the mechanics of the system, and I think I kind of hate the mechanics of the system. So
that's a fair assessment.
All right, fair enough. So we also asked for Nathan and Chris's ratings, and at last time we talked about East Texas University, we talked about how we had a real issue engaging Nathan and Chris, but I think we engaged them really well this time. I did a couple things that we'll talk about, but actually, Nathan and Chris rated the game an 8 and a 9, respectively, so they also had a pretty darn good session. So overall success. Fun side note, Nathan and I had our first side conversation that didn't include you guys.
It was weird. I didn't like it.
So an ongoing theme of us including Nathan in our games is that, you know, we've all known each other for years. We've been friends for years. And then Nathan is the new guy. And he's been the new guy now for over a year. Yeah. So we should probably stop referring to him as the new guy. But we routinely have conversations in front of Nathan that Nathan has no idea what we're talking about. Well, Nathan and I did that last night, or yesterday, I should say, with the guys. That was funny.
I knew what you guys were talking about.
Okay, fair enough.
Brian audio. Didn't want to ruin it.
Brian was in on the joke.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk audio. I got my new laptop.
What did you get? Dude, you got a Dell?
I got a Dell. I got an Inspiron. I can't even remember the model number.
7000 gaming.
Yeah, 7000 series, 5777 or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. It's a really nice laptop for a very economical price. I was very happy with the price. But a much more powerful computer than I've had, certainly in years. And the new laptop made a huge difference. I could actually run Discord, which we'll get into. But also, I used the good, Brian corrected me, not great, not excellent, but good microphone that he gifted me with that setup. So I think my audio was much better than it has been in a long time. And my game experience was actually, everyone sounded great to me. The videos were not glitchy. It was a great experience for me. So audio for you guys, how was audio?
I agree. It was great as well. I also used the new microphone that Brian gifted me. I will say it's a nice microphone. I like it very much. I felt it improved my audio quality.
You sounded great.
Thank you. Everybody else's audio quality sounded great. It was awesome that, Dusty wasn't freezing and crashing.
Was the bird in there?
No, the birds have been in Liz's office, but I think with the arm and pointing it to the other side and the pop filter,
it's the supercardioid pattern.
Yeah. I think it really excluded the bird. Cause I meant to ask if anyone had noticed that. Cause nope. The bird was tweeting some while we were recording.
I did
recording.
Not notice the bird at all.
Okay. Good.
I maybe heard the bird while you were talking.
Okay.
I didn't.
I assume that you were pushed to talk, Mike.
I was pushed to talk, but even still, sometimes if he's squawking while I'm talking. I mean, push to talk doesn't silence the bird. I wish it would.
Can we talk about push to talk right now?
Please, go
I
for it.
I hate it.
I know you
what?
Hate it.
I hate
he
it.
He keeps forgetting to push to talk.
I'm on the computer talking so much that I'm just having a conversation with myself. And I'm like, why aren't you guys answering me? Why? And I'm like, oh, God. Then you guys have already moved on.
And it happened several times where you broke in and said, I hate push to talk. This whole time. I forgot I had to push.
Yeah, so I'm not a big fan. So two episodes ago,
yep.
When we were planning this game, of course the game's been pushed back several times.
Yep.
I was challenged to run this game on my tablet.
Yeah, I listened to that today, and we totally forgot.
Whoops. It. But now I don't think I could, not with push to talk.
Yeah, that could be challenging.
Chris wasn't push to talk.
He switched up. He did switch up to push to talk. You could sometimes see his finger. Dipping down onto the, I don't know if he was full push to talk, but he might have been muting, unmuting.
Yeah, so
I don't think everyone needs to be pushed to talk.
Yeah.
I really don't think. So number one, I was great with push to talk. I mean, it became very instinctive for me very quickly to reach over and hit the control button.
Yep.
To talk.
Is that the button you use?
Yes,
it is. My problem is I think I use the space button.
I use the mouse button. I use my mouse.
The center mouse. Like the mouse wheel.
Yep.
I should have done that.
So I'm going to say, Brian, I think that you here in RFC Studios, I think you have an isolated enough environment.
Max.
Max isn't that bad, though.
When I'm recording a podcast, he's certainly bad.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, maybe we give it a try next time. Maybe we let you be free of the push to talk.
But then if I'm eating, it'll be disgusting.
If you're eating.
That can
well,
be the mic.
You can, yeah, just mute.
Yeah.
You can still mute.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So
that's
maybe
push to untalk.
Yeah.
maybe next time you try and get off push to talk.
Okay.
Because you've got a pretty good environment here. You don't have a lot of background noise, a lot of unexpected interruptions.
Yeah, true.
At least for now.
Yeah. And my wife walked in at one point, and it was great to be able to just speak to her freely, knowing that you guys didn't have to hear that conversation.
Yeah.
So I really like push to talk. I think it's a personal thing. Having the option is nice, having the setup is nice. Is it me, or does Discord just sound better than Skype?
Much better than Skype. Yeah,
the sound is so. We mentioned it, on the last East Texas University episode that Discord is more of a resource hog. It must be sending like better quality MP3 files or whatever back and forth.
So a couple things Skype does. Skype lowers the fidelity of your voice
and compresses.
And for those of you who don't know what compress means in audio terms, it doesn't mean make a smaller file. It means maximize the volume that you basically have. So it's like when you're watching TV and a local ad comes on for a car dealership, and it's way louder than what you heard on TV. Like the quiet parts and the loud parts have been expanded to maximize like the dynamic range, so everything is about the same loudness. It makes everything sound like it's blaring. And like Dusty said, it's also using a lower bit rate, and honestly, probably a lower sample rate as well. It's just a really unnatural sound. Yeah, Skype audio sucks, and I basically live on it. Discord doesn't work for me. There are actually services that sound way better than Discord.
Yeah.
I've been using an application called Cast for podcasts, and man, it is super high fidelity audio. It sounds phenomenal.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that something we might want to explore?
No.
Okay.
There's no video.
It's just audio.
It's just audio, and it's limited to 4 people.
Okay.
I really like the video.
Yeah. The video is really good quality, and it doesn't wane in and out like Skype does, right? So Skype, you get that lag, and everybody goes all fuzzy for a few minutes, and we all sound like robots from time to time. I don't get that with Discord, and I think that makes a big difference.
So we are also, well, yeah, you recorded that session, Brian, but as we said before, actual plays are kind of not our thing, so we're not going to release that recording. Since we don't record, I'd still like to do the challenge of going split screen on a tablet and trying to do Roll20 and Discord on a tablet at the same time. I'd still like to do that next game if you're up for it.
Okay.
But this game, I was so pumped with the new laptop and the new microphone, and I think we had plenty of change to manage this last game. So we didn't have too much to talk about. So it's kind of perfect. Let's talk about the rule set. So Savage Worlds. We have been, no secret, struggling with the Savage Worlds rules. We talked last time about how it's different, but not different enough to really stick for us to wrap our minds around it. But there are some things that we did a better job of. We did a better job on trait rolls.
We did. I think we've gotten a little smoother with that, with the exception of still not knowing how to do damage on unarmed.
Well, yeah, trait rolls and damage. Yeah, we did a bad job on damage.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you want to talk? So sorry. I screwed up damage. Someone asked me what's unarmed damage, and I was like, I think it's a D4, because I think there's a feat to raise it to a D6. Or not a feat, an edge. An edge to raise it to a D6. But I was just completely wrong.
Yeah.
I'm a martial artist.
So
I'm not.
The way damage actually works unarmed is it's your strength.
Yeah.
So and that's a lot higher. That could be a D8 or a D10 instead of a D4. So I was just wrong.
It happens.
And it impacted combat. So
we fixed it.
Yeah, we fixed it. We figured it out. Here's the bigger issue. We don't use bennies.
Yeah.
We never use the bennies.
We haven't had to, right?
Because we don't really know how to do it, or we don't know how to do it, we don't know when to say, hey, let's use a benny. Because it probably would behoove us if we knew what to do.
It wouldn't have really helped, because you didn't need to soak any damage, because you short-circuited. So I intended, okay, we're going to get into the spoilers for Red Necromancer. So if you think you'd like your GM to run the one sheet of Red Necromancer, which is really fun, you should stop listening right now. If you're still with me, I plan to have like 12 zombies come down on you guys. That was the whole point of this session.
Oh God, I'm sorry.
Was to have 12 zombies come down on you guys, and you were going to need to soak some damage, by God.
Whoops.
And you guys totally short-circuited that, but in the best way possible.
You told us that we would have combat the next game.
Yes.
And we
did. I had forgotten about that.
We did have combat.
I forgot. Wow.
My character happens to be a very skilled unarmed fighter, so it wasn't much for combat.
And my character is very forward-thinking, oh, this is the obvious occult thing, let me take possession of that. Which I hope backfires against me one day. Because that's like the third time we've done that now, where it's just like, yoink, I've got the evil thing.
That's a good thought, actually. The moment when your player says something and you're like, yeah, I should steal that.
Yeah.
In all seriousness, though, we just didn't use bennies. I want to keep trying to master set. We got 4 sessions left. So we're 4 in with 4 to go. We're exactly halfway through.
What if one of us fails a year?
Or we get held back.
Yeah, I guess you can't get. What if it takes us longer to graduate?
The dean puts us on like double secret probation.
Oh, I love that.
That could be a way to extend the game.
Yep.
Or if you guys are feeling it, we could go to grad school.
Grad school. Yep.
Wow. Wow, I love this.
Dr. Alex T. Morrow.
I don't see him being a doctor. I could see him getting his MBA.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you call an MBA?
MBA.
Yeah.
Mr.
Mr.
or Ms.
Or Ms. Yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah. Or whatever's appropriate.
Not doctor.
Or master.
Not doctor is the point. Not doctor.
Yeah.
Okay. In all seriousness, so rule set is still mixed, right? Better at trait rolls, completely screwed up damage, and I just didn't use bennies at all. So we're still not playing the system to its full benefit. I'm going to wait until the last session 8, before I really rule how I feel about Savage Worlds. I am struggling with it. I am struggling to learn it and glom it, and I don't know why. I haven't figured out why, other than it's just not different enough.
You know, I think one thing we may be missing too, and again, it might have been for how we avoided the primary combat in this, but I don't think we've had a combat encounter yet where we've really encountered more than just a couple of enemies at one time, right?
It was supposed to work out in this game.
Right, for this one it was, but so if we had actually entered into combat with these zombies, would you have done the whole, like, card system?
We've talked around it. Do we need to, before we go any further, do we need to actually say what happened?
I don't think so, because I want to get into the actual session now.
Okay.
And I want to actually lead. So we talked about audio. We talked about Savage Worlds. Let's spend just a minute on the character interviews. So, Mike, something else that I didn't do that we talked about in the last ETU episode, I talked about having a table of, like, random crap that happens to college kids.
Yep.
And rolling that. And I didn't do that. And that was on purpose, actually.
Okay.
I didn't want to do the whole thing, because it feels like the academics role and all that. I just didn't want to do that. It didn't feel natural.
Yeah.
And I had done a bad job of engaging Chris and Nathan. So I decided just to pick one random thing each.
Yep.
And interview those two guys about their random thing each. So I asked Nathan about, I told Nathan, I said, Nathan, you have a new love interest, you know, or your character, Bob, has a new love interest. Tell us, you know, what's going on with that? And I opened it up for him to kind of make that up, and he did.
Yep.
That was the one thing that I didn't catch. So I know we talked about doing like a complications table or something in the last game. And when I joined a few minutes late. You had told Nathan that he had a girlfriend. And I wasn't certain if that was something that you'd pulled off the complications table or just pulled from the air. So okay.
Pulled from the air.
Okay.
Pulled from the air. Based on some things that he said last game, and based on just trying to get him and Chris more into the game, I really wanted to take our feedback from last time that things should change between sessions.
Yep.
Because, dude, like a whole semester passes between sessions.
Yeah.
So it sounds like Nathan got the girlfriend, but did Chris get a complication or did Chris?
Yeah, he had an article written about him in the school paper. And I asked
him. Oh, that's what
that was. I said, tell me about that article. And he went into depth about what was in the article. That was just a device to get those two engage with their characters before we started playing, because the last session that we played turned into the Brian and Mike show.
Yep.
And I really wanted to balance that.
Yeah.
You know what I think also worked really, really well this time in getting us engaged? I think you came right out of the gate with us with a hook, right? You had Maggie point to the guy on TV and be like, that amulet is exuding evil. And then normally what you do is tell me why you need to go to the trailer park or wherever it is. Tell me why you would think your character would go to the objective. And I think what you did differently this time was you said, would any of you not have a reason to go to the objective? And I think that made a big difference. So then rather than having everybody to think up a motivation for this character, we had a chance to object to a demotivation if we wanted the opportunity to object. So I think that actually moved it along a lot quicker.
So yeah, you've been asked by an NPC to accompany them to this place.
Yep.
Why wouldn't you go?
Exactly. And I think that worked out really well.
And then I don't think there were any objections, but if there were, I was going to deal with them.
Yep.
Wait, so Maggie didn't go with us?
No, she didn't. No, it was, so the reason I told Nathan that he had a relationship is I wanted to use that person, his girlfriend, to have the grandmother who was in the trailer park.
Yep.
So I was introducing that NPC to give him a reason to care. And to give you all someone to accompany you.
Yep.
So we talked about the call to action. I got you to the trailer park. That worked. Uh-huh. Now, Brian, let's talk about the rails. And what rails?
Yeah. Hey.
I got you to the trailer park on rails. You knew the amulet around the guy's neck was evil because I had Maggie point that out. And then Nathan starts off with...
What if we just expletive this guy up?
Yeah. And that was a funny moment for me. So they're in front of Jimmy, who's running the trailer park. And the plot of the one sheet is that this guy is running this trailer park. It's a retirement community / trailer park. And as the residents die, he turns them into zombies and continues collecting their social security checks. And he also uses the zombies to keep the park clean, basically is slave labor. So in a world where necromancy exists, I could see a redneck necromancer, hence the name of the adventure of the one sheet, completely doing this. It kind of makes a little bit of sense. It's kind of a fun.
Makes a lot of sense.
It makes a lot of sense.
So Nathan said that when it comes to let's mess the guy up. But the thing is, we say that a lot. But we never really do it.
So I think you and I a lot of times act as a rationalizing force.
Yes.
And a guiding force. And I think this time, so this is the conversation that literally happened in my head was as soon as he said that, I was like, oh, well, yeah, that would be fun, but we should play it right because we don't want our characters to get in trouble and we don't want to get in trouble with the police. And so we should take a bunch of time to needle this guy and make him admit to guilt. And
then with my character, I thought what would be great is if, he did this and then I just scooted. I my character thought was going to think that was funny. And then as he actually attacked, it occurred to me, we're sophomores now. We've been doing this. We know that, there's magic is real. There's demons or ghosts and there's goblins. We're pretty confident that, Maggie pointed out that's the thing. Why not? What would really stop us from doing this? And the answer is nothing.
Nothing. That was the exact same thought that went in my head. And I think also for my character, he remembered his encounter with the police from the last adventure where they were very laissez-faire and ready to write things off and ignore the paranormal. So my character was prepared to start exploiting that as well.
I'm going to go on a tangent for a second.
Okay.
My favorite episode of the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon.
I know which one it is.
Is the Dragon's Graveyard.
Yes.
And I love episodes of shows where the characters seem to acknowledge the meta plot that unfolds in every show. And the characters themselves are like, no. So in that episode, it starts off with Dungeon Master showing up and saying, ah, adventurers, here's what I need you. And Bobby's just, not Bobby. What's the ranger's name? Hank.
Hank
is just like, no, we need to kill Venger. He's causing a lot of problems for us. He foils us at every turn. You're going to tell us right now how to kill Venger. And Dungeon Master's like, what? And the episode unfolds.
Yep.
And I love that. And as soon as Nathan said, why wouldn't I just mess this guy up right now? I was like, why wouldn't he? You've had three prior sessions to learn. This is basically the bad guy. That's basically the evil doohickey. Why wouldn't you just kick the crap out of him and take it?
Yep. I think the conversation we actually had metagame was this is why the supernatural doesn't work in real life, because if it existed, people wouldn't tolerate it. We would just obliterate it.
Or we would completely industrialize it.
Right. Right.
And regulate it and put rules around it and leverage it to get crap done.
Yeah.
If necromancy was real, you can't tell me that there wouldn't be some kind of laws passed about selling your remains to companies as a worker paid less than minimum wage, that the payments delivered to your family after your death. You can't tell me that wouldn't happen.
Yeah, that would absolutely happen.
It would be
happen.
Regulated and it would be industrialized. And that's why if magic were real, we would just use the crap out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Electricity.
Yeah.
I'm actually going through my head right now. I think there would be certain countries that would opt out of that, and certain countries would maximize it.
Dude, there are religions that opt out of giving blood.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. But if it were real and practical, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so when Nathan said that, as the GM, I kind of wanted you guys to do it. I didn't say anything. I tried to back off, and I just gave you this. I was like, if you want to do that, you can do that.
I was worried that we were going to disappoint you.
No, I was the opposite of disappointed. You guys taking the reins, every time you take the reins, Brian, you in particular are like, I was worried that we're getting away from your plot. No, F my plot. Forget my plot. This is a role-playing game, and Nathan's perspective of, wait a minute, I've been down this road before, and I'm not stupid. I'm just going to do this. Like in the horror movie, don't run. Don't hide behind the door. Like, what are you doing? Just hit him. You know,
so I have to bring up the cautionary tale point, or the caution at this point, right? The thing I'm worried about now that we found this new freedom is what prevents our characters from becoming murder hobos, right? So if you're familiar with the world of RPG, there's a trope of murder hobos where your players just go completely off the rails 100%, and all they do is going around murdering, pillaging, stealing, unabated, knowing that there's no consequences for their action.
So I don't think I'm worried about that with you guys. In the last episode, we talked about how awkward you felt cornering the antagonist who happened to be female.
Yeah.
And how awkward you felt playing these two football player guys cornering this chick.
Yet we're already discussing plans of burning her shop down.
Yeah, that's quickly where things went.
Yeah.
That's quickly, quickly. By the end of the session, it turned into, well, F it. At this point, we know Julia's been behind several, if not all four, of these issues that this town has had. Why wouldn't we just burn down her, what do you call a psychic shop?
A psychic shop.
Why wouldn't we just burn down her palm readery center?
Psychic shop sounds so much better.
It does. I was trying to make it better. All right. Well, so boundaries. Boundaries is one reason. So, for example, Nathan is the one who said, what if I just mess this guy up, right?
Yep.
And as you guys started talking, you guys started trying to optimize that. You were in front of the guy. You didn't discuss violence ahead of time. Nathan says, what if I just mess this guy up? And all of a sudden it was like, well, Chris's character has this assassinate power, even though he's a college kid. But whatever. Yeah. Whatever, though. I love Chris. He wants to play rogues. So rogue it up, Chris. But he wanted to assassinate. And I was like, whoa. Okay, here's what I'll let you do. Bob, first of all, there's no reason you guys would have discussed outside the trailer jumping this guy.
Yeah.
If there was a reason why you could have done that, then sure, we'll retcon it. But this is in the trailer, and this thought's just occurring to Bob.
Yep.
So you can do one of two things. Bob can verbally say, let's just mess this guy up, and that will warn the guy, or Bob can jump him. So Bob jumped him.
Yep.
In my mind, because metagamey, I knew it was happening. In my mind, he probably flashed us a look, like... And, you know, like a grin and then like a look. And that's why my character was sort of like trying to high step it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he just did it.
Yeah.
But those boundaries I said were, okay, you want to do this. Bob, you can do this or you can do that. But no one else gets to optimize attack. So I'm trying to get away from train rails and go for guardrails.
Yeah.
I want to keep you down a path, but I want to really widen the space where I let you go back and forth between that path.
Are they white lines? Are they bright lines?
Or- they are literally don't screw up other people's fun guardrails.
Sorry, business jargon. That was popular a few years ago.
Yeah, fair enough.
So I've got a question for you. Had it not worked out that we had triggered the zombies so that they then came and conveniently took care of our crime for us, right? Had we not triggered that chain of events where basically we wound up just walking away, leaving Bob tied up for someone to discover him?
Jimmy? Bob
had,
is Nathan's character.
Sorry, yeah. Had that chain of events not happened, what would have been the consequence for us?
Well, actually, consequences were going to be much worse for you my way.
Uh-oh. Okay.
I was looking forward to you guys having to explain to the cops why you had murdered 12 old people in a retirement community.
That's a good point.
That I was really looking forward to that. Now, in my head, as I've said before, the cops in Pine Box, Texas, and I've read, there's an excellent short fiction anthology of short stories on Kindle, which is where I got it, about Pine Box, Texas. And I've read a bunch of them, and a bunch of them center on the sheriff and his deputies and how they're just trying to, they know supernatural's out there. They don't talk about it. They don't acknowledge it, and they don't look too deep. So you would have been able to talk your way out of that probably.
Yeah.
But I was so looking forward to, let me tell you why we killed these 12 old people.
But our solution of pretending that we left and then coming back and finding them was just nice and neat.
Yeah, but yeah. I wanted you to feel bad that Jimmy had died.
I did for a minute.
I did not.
I did for a minute.
You left Jimmy tied up with zombies trying to get into the trailer, and these guys were like, okay, we're outside the gates, so we wait. And I'm like, okay, you wait. Would you be willing to wait for 15 minutes? Because it's how long? Yeah, we'll wait 15 minutes. All right. 10 minutes in, you hear Jimmy's strangled screams. 5 minutes later, you know, Maggie, the car with Maggie pulls up, and then we went from there. But you left Jimmy to die, and I wanted that to feel not great, but you guys did get over that pretty quick.
You know, as soon as we found out that he was stealing their Social Security checks and taking advantage of them, all empathy went out the window. That is pretty much the lowest thing you can do is taking advantage of old people.
I'm okay with that, especially since we're playing this as an 80s movie.
Yeah.
And they were dead old people.
So if we had broken the talisman earlier, would that have prevented his death? Would they have, you know, popped out and then just died?
I wasn't going to let you break it until Maggie dispelled it.
Gotcha. Okay.
And what I was going to do is, as soon as you guys started needling him, well, I think I told you this at the session, but for those of it at home, I was going to have him role play with you and you get out of my trailer and all that. And as soon as you went to leave,
yeah,
he was going to get on the PA system,
yeah,
and tell all the zombies to attack you.
Yep.
And I was so looking forward to that.
Whoops.
But instead, you beat up Jimmy. And I tried to have Jimmy use his actions to get back to the PA microphone and get his talisman to call for the attack, but he just couldn't.
So going back to a couple episodes ago when we were talking about the Stanford prison guard experiment, how we're able to do terrible things to people under the right circumstances, I got there.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I literally beat the snot out of Jimmy, and I felt no remorse for it. None.
Yeah, no.
I abused him. I punched him. I was just mean about it.
Yeah, there was the whole scene where you interrogated him by punching him in the gut repeatedly.
Yeah.
That's the first time I can ever remember you guys torturing an NPC.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
It really is. But I hated this guy.
Yeah.
Because, why? That's interesting. What elicited such a strong
response? Two things. So, one.
Was it too real for you?
In a way. In a way. Okay, so, my character, which I played it off a little bit in the game. He grew up in a trailer park. And he kind of resents the world that he came from. There's a little bit of that with me as well. There's some resentment, like, especially like when it comes to like certain members of my family or people that I, you know, grew up with, not you, Mike, that I feel that, you know,
I'm confused on when you're talking about Brian
and when you're talking about Alex. Yeah.
It's both.
Well, Brian. Okay.
It's both. So, I mean, I'm getting a little too close to home with that in the character, but I'm able to role play it. So, one, I kind of resent the guy for being, you know, a terrible person. One, still kind of a redneck. Being a redneck's okay, but being a redneck and stealing like the Social Security checks.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
So, was beating him up cathartic?
Yes.
Did it help you work anything out?
No. It felt great, but it didn't work out anything specifically.
Okay. As you left the session, so I'll just tell, I went downstairs with a huge grin on my face, and I told Susan, you know, this is the best ETU session, Savage World session that we've had so far.
By far.
Yeah. So, I was just happy. I was happy for hours after we played because the session had unfolded so nicely, and you guys took the reins. And I gave you some guardrails, but you know, you took the reins and it was awesome and such great fun. So I was great. How were you immediately after the session?
Brian? I was good. I mean, I usually, because of the time we play, I'm a little tired when we're done. I'm not going to say I was specifically energized, but I was also not tired. I actually, we got, the wife and I left and went like out of town to do some shopping, and I just, you know, I felt good. But I emotionally, I left it all at the table. I don't think that it elevated my mood in any way, but I certainly didn't feel depressed or anything after I left.
Yeah.
So I teased something that you'll probably deal with in an upcoming session. I teased the Girl Scout riding through the park and kind of seeing what was up, and the other Girl Scouts watching you from afar, you know, with blank expressions, and driving away as soon as you dispelled the locket or the amulet. Was that just a weird, goofy, stupid aside, or was it actually intriguing?
That scene was super effective. I thought it was very intriguing. I thought it was a great way to set up a new unknown element into our adventure we hadn't gotten to yet. It was very well framed. It's very well played out.
I'm a little nervous.
I'm kind of nervous too. There's a part of me that wonders if we play this right, if they may not be allies.
I'm just worried that we're going to revisit the Dusk game and do the exact same thing that happened before.
And Chris already joked about that.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, honestly, I thought we were getting there yesterday. I didn't realize that the old people were zombies.
Yeah, I was a little worried about that too.
So I thought, are we going to kill old people here? Because not realizing they were truly zombies, I was like, oh God. That's why I wanted to beat it. If I had known there were zombies, I probably would have said, let's just have some fun. But I specifically wanted to exit because I thought that they were going to recover once whatever spell was broken.
That's I love I that you're making decisions based on in-game stuff. Yeah. I love that. And you know what? I have got to compliment Chris. So this game, as you said before, Brian, got pushed back several times. And unbeknownst to you guys, and he didn't hint at it a bit, before the last reschedule, we thought Chris was going to miss the game.
Yeah.
And I told Chris, I said, oh man, it's going to be awesome. There's going to be a ton of combat. And I told him the plot of the game, not the whole plot. I didn't tell him about Jimmy or the amulet.
I forgot about that.
But I said, hey, Chris, you know, you guys are going to be going up against a trailer park full of zombies. So I had told him the plot, and he did not say a word.
Wow.
To you
that's
guys.
Awesome. Thank you, Chris.
That's good job,
he
Chris. Didn't,
and I called him out for it today. He walked up to me today at work, and he's like, hey, great game last night. Or yesterday, and I said, hey, I've got to compliment you for not saying anything. And he's like, man, I had the most fun sitting back and watching it unfold, but then jumping in when my character would. So he knew what he was doing, and he did not drop a spoiler. He did not, you know, jump in and use his knowledge. Chris played that perfectly, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, that was very well done.
I am gifted with excellent players. All right. I think we've covered the session and all the goodness. Let's talk about lessons learned. So, lessons learned on the audio. You know, if you're gonna play online, just the barrier to entry for me to play, not stream the game, because we're not streaming it, just for me to be able to understand the guys and them understand me and us to use Discord, I had to upgrade my laptop. Yep. Now, I wound up spending $1,200 on a Dell gaming laptop, which I still think's very reasonable price.
It's a great laptop.
Considering I haven't bought computer stuff in so long and I've been saving up for it anyway, it was fine and I happened to be ready to buy it. But it was kind of a barrier to entry that I didn't expect. I thought a really basic computer would handle Discord and Roll20 no problem.
Which is the crazy thing. A basic computer should be able to handle these programs,
so,
right?
Well, so, yes, that is weird.
Wait, I don't want to scare people off. So right. let's sit back for a second. Do you remember the specs or the processor family of your old ThinkPad?
Oh, my old laptop is like almost 10 years old, dude.
Oh, yeah. Then, duh.
But a counterpoint that I think is actually a little more concerning is Chris's 5-year-old iPad could not run Discord. And I know it's an iPad. I know it's 5 years old, but there's definitely some loss returns.
It's basic
there.
Communications.
Right.
Yeah. But there's the planned obsolescence, though, that things, especially in Apple, they throttle down their stuff.
Well, but they do that. I'm not going to advocate for it entirely, but they sound like there's really good battery reasons why they do that.
Yeah. They should give you they will give you the choice as to how you address it. You accept poor battery performance or poor processor performance. Yeah. But the thing is. So a 10-year-old desktop, should still be able to run Discord.
Yeah.
But a 10-year-old laptop, that's pretty old.
Okay, yeah. So here's the lesson learned. Test your setup
Yes.
Call some friends and test your setup, because hardware is an issue for online games.
Yep.
Call some friends, call some family, you know, whatever. Test your setup. All right. That's the audio lesson learned. Any rules lesson learned on Savage Worlds? I mean, we're still kind of figuring out as we go along. I don't know that we had any big revelations that helped us figure it out other than, oops, we messed up damage.
Yeah, I don't think we really learned anything new about the system this session.
We're still giving it a fair shake, though. We got four sessions of Savage Worlds left.
Yep.
All right. How about the interviews with, you know, the kind of the character interview way to start things off, where I just interviewed Nathan for a while about his new girlfriend, and then I interviewed Chris for a while about his article in the school paper.
I think that was really effective. I think it was effective in two ways. I think it was effective in getting the game going from the beginning and moving the game quickly. And I think it was a really effective way of engaging players where we were concerned that maybe weren't being as engaged in past games.
So maybe the lesson learned is, if you're not seeing character development, you know, force character development at the beginning of the session, or draw, not instead of force, how about this? Specifically draw character development out.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that. Specifically draw it out, because maybe they can't get homework done, whatever, but specifically drawing it out works well. All right. The call to action. It's a lesson we learned, you know, a couple of episodes ago where we talked about the last ETU session. You've got to have a specific call to action. Once you hook the players, let them fight. Let them reel their way in. Let them go where they need to go. But you got to hook them.
Yep. I have a special lesson learned from this game.
Shoot.
Sometimes what you think may be a crazy, rash, insane decision that's going to end horribly ends up with the optimal outcome.
I've got a lesson learned.
Uh-oh.
Once your players get used to the overall meta plot,
yeah,
of every session, like an episode of Scooby-Doo,
yep,
you got to change it up as the GM so that they can't completely short-circuit it.
Don't be complacent.
Yep.
Yeah, don't be a complacent GM. And I've just been running these one sheets. I think I'm still okay to just run the next one sheet.
I'll be honest with you. If our arc as characters, at least for a while, becomes we just do that, I'm fine with it.
So Brian's okay on becoming murder hobos.
You know, to an extent, not to take things to the extreme conclusion. But if, you know, it worked out this time, oh, it worked out the next time as well. Oh, it's really going to work. Oh, no, God. You know,
see, that's the thing. I think if we continue down this path, we have to have a comeuppance.
Yes, exactly.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
But I love the idea that we're running a Monster Squad game. And Monster Squad has that moment 2/3 of the way into the movie where they gear up, sharpen some stakes, and become badasses.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
All right. So any final lessons learned?
We're coming for you, Julia.
We're coming for
coming
you.
For you, Julia. All right. Awesome. Thank you for listening. We had a great session and a good episode 53. And keep listening to RPG Lessons Learned. More coming at you. People call them postmortems, evaluations, appraisals, reviews, retrospectives. We call them lessons learned, and we're sharing ours with you.